Okay, before we start, since it has what to do with what we're going to discuss indirectly about the Holocaust, I don't want it to get lost, though, in the middle of our discussion, so I'm going to speak about it first. It's specifically directed to the yeshiva, but it also applies to everybody else who lives here. No one, especially the yeshiva board, are to be anywhere near these Hafganot tonight in Kiryat Sefer for two reasons. Maybe for more reasons, but two reasons I'll tell you. First reason is it's dangerous. And people there are not very discriminating about who they throw stones on or who they light fires near or whatever. And I can't take responsibility for anything happening to any of you there. First reason. Second reason, which is probably the more important reason, is that this is not our Masorah. This is not the way that we hold that you protest things by damaging people who have nothing to do with anything, damaging cars from people who carry it safer, making them not be able to get out of here and stop going wild. I don't know which is a bigger toeva, that or what this parade is all about, to tell you the truth. And even though I understand in Israeli society there is some kind of idea that this is the only way you can make things happen, that's not our Masorah. It's not my Rebbe's Masorah, nor his Rebbe's Masorah. That's not the way to do things, not the way to protest things. I want to go on record, I protest this parade. I was Yotze by Machor. Nothing you're going to throw stones down there at the police is going to stop or protest this anymore. Especially innocent policemen who may not be so innocent after they get into a clash and beat up people also. Policemen are also not chafim nitesha. But policemen are doing their job, and to stone them, what in the world is that going to help to stop this whole thing? So we're going to speak about where a person makes ishtadlus and what kind of ishtadlus, and where you have to be subdued and accept and not make the wrong kind of ishtadlus. And that fits into this, which we'll get to in a few seconds. But in any case, if any yeshiva guy is caught there, then you can find a yeshiva where that is their Masorah tomorrow. Ba'amevin yod. So you are not to go and be involved, not tonight, not tomorrow. Stay away from Yerushalayim tomorrow, or stay away at least from those parts where these Hafganot are going to be, and also stay away from the parade. Okay, I don't think I could be more clear. Okay. Last week, we spoke about the difference of opinion amongst Gedolei Yisrael, as well as the difference of opinion amongst not halachically inclined Jews, as to what the proper reaction to the initial decrees of Hitler when he came to power, and the initial measures against the Jews of Germany, because then it only affected the Jews of Germany itself. Because that's all Hitler had control over at that time. And there were those that held that something drastic had to be done in protest that would hurt the Germans in their pocket, which is boycotting all German goods. And others held that that would not accomplish anything except to make Hitler more angry, where he would take out his anger on the Jews of Germany. And the people making this boycott were not under his thumb. They weren't risking anything, and they were hurting other people because of their irresponsible boycott, which wouldn't accomplish anything anyway. Would make a protest, but on the backs of people who would suffer, who couldn't decide one way or the other if they wanted this or not. So I'd like to discuss a little bit. Last week we quoted the Sfarno in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, that at some times Klal Yisrael is a klal, and individual Jews have to accept the fact that they can't fight the circumstances that come their way, and therefore they have to give in to them. They have to subdue themselves before forces that they can't overcome. As Yaakov Avinu realized that he can't overcome Esav, even though he prepared himself for war and davening and he sent presents, in the end he realized that he's not going to be able to overcome Esav, and therefore he subdued himself to Esav. He bowed down to him 7 times. And the Sfarno says that's why Esav had a turn of heart and didn't decimate Yaakov and his family, because Yaakov subdued himself. And he adds that if the people in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash would not have made a futile revolt against the Romans, which everyone knew they couldn't possibly win, and they weren't zoche to win spiritually, and had they subdued themselves, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was of the opinion, and begged the militants to give in and to make a treaty with Rome, and they wouldn't do that. They would rather die like they did at Masada than live under Roman rule. So because of that, says the Sfarno, the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Had they subdued themselves, perhaps, he says, the Beis Hamikdash wouldn't have been destroyed then. That's what he says. That's the Sfarno. So I have to understand exactly what that means, what the parameters are, because definitely you can't just accept everything and subdue yourself. You know, the Maccabees fought, they didn't subdue themselves to the Greeks. So when, yes, when not, and in what spirit? So the Medrash says that when Yaakov bowed 7 times to Esav, each of the 7 times he took away a different toeva, a different abomination, a different hatred from his heart, and until they all were gone, and Esav looked favorably upon Yaakov Avinu, just like the Sfarno says. The Karakemach, Rabbeinu Bach, explains the concept of Hachnoah. He says Hachnoah is an idea that a person recognizes that he is not capable of controlling every situation, and sometimes the situations are beyond his control. You can't do everything, you can't control everything, and therefore you need the help of the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what Hachnoah teaches a person. And it's true that a person has to make hishtadlus, but hishtadlus, he has to realize, is not that he's in control. He's fulfilling a condition, and the Rabbanu Shalom is the one in the end who decides whether his hishtadlus will be successful or not. And therefore, since your hishtadlus is only to fulfill a condition, so the hishtadlus has to be savir, it has to be reasonable, it has to be within the conditions that the Rabbanu Shalom would help you, which we'll get to in a few seconds. He says that's the whole idea of tzedakah. Why is there such an idea of tzedakah in the world? That a person, when he's merciful on an ani, and recognizes that the ani perhaps made all the hishtadlus that he should do, and he's still an ani, then that means that it's a galgal achozer ba'olam, and anyone who's rich could become poor. And you see from the ani clearly that one cannot control every situation in this world. You can't blame anius on the fact that somebody's lazy, or they're not smart, or whatever. There's plenty of industrious, smart people who are poor. And circumstances beyond a person's control can put him into oni. Anybody who's an oni can tell you that. So an usher who comes in contact with an oni has to realize that, and it brings him to be Machnia himself also. And he says, that's why the Gemara says, most sailors are Hasidic, not the normal sailors that we speak about in secular literature. No, most of them are not Hasidic. He's probably talking about from Jewish sailors. And why? Because when you're in the middle of the sea, you know that you're not in control. That's the forces of nature, which basically are the forces of the Ribono Shel Olam, that control. There's very little you can do out at sea to really guarantee your survival. You can do everything, the right thing, and then a storm comes or something that you can't control, and you're at the mercy, in the middle of nowhere, of the mercy of nature, of the Ribono Shel Olam. So therefore, sailors who are constantly aware of this, basically are people who recognize how much they're in the hands of the Ribono Shel Olam. And those other people are Hasidim. And also, the Rabbeinu Bachya says that which Yaakov Avinu bowed seven times to Esav was a hint to the pasuk Sheva Yipol Tzadik to come. A tzadik can fall seven times and still get up. And the idea being, it's not despite the fact that he fell seven times, is the fact that he can still get up. It's not even that the falling enables him to muster the strength to get up each time a little bit more, and it's the falling itself that enables him to get up. That's a second meaning. Not even that. But it could be that the idea is that a tzaddik who recognizes that he could fall seven times, he could fall and with his ishtablis get up, and still not going to help. He's going to fall again and fall again. A tzaddik who understands how vulnerable he is, how much he's not in control. He can do whatever he has to do, and he should do whatever he has to do under normal circumstances, and try to be mishtadim that he should be zochet to be able to stand. But the fact that he recognizes that he could fall himself gives him the ability to stand properly. And the truth is that there's a medrash that seems to contradict all of this by Yaakov Avinu specifically. The medrash says that Yaakov Avinu, because he bowed seven times to Esav, seven Mekomos Kedoshim were destroyed, including two Batei Mikdash, or three Batei Mikdash, and four other places, Shiloh and the Nova Givon, what's it called, all these places, all these Mekomos HaKedoshim were destroyed because Yaakov Avinu bowed to Esav. Now that medrash seems to be diametrically opposed to the other medrash, that because he bowed to Esav, that's why he was saved, because he humbled himself. So the answer is that there is a Zohar. The Zohar says that when Yaakov Avinu bowed to Esav, his intention was not to bow to Esav, but he bowed to the Shechina that he saw before him. His intention was to bow to the Shechina. Now what does that mean? Bow to the Shechina? It looked like he was bowing to Esav. The idea is that Yaakov Avinu realized it's not Esav who's causing the problem. Because if God wanted to help him, he could make Esav disappear. He could give Esav a heart attack, a stroke. He could make all his 400 men disappear in a second. If Esav presents a problem, it's because there's something that Yaakov Avinu is lacking, that this problem is a threat to him. And therefore, if the Ribono Shel Olam is not helping him and not taking away Esav, then he has to be machnia himself, not to Esav, but to the Ribono Shel Olam who's bringing this upon him. In other words, Ribono Shel Olam, I've done everything I can do. He did every ishtablus. He prepared himself for war, prepared himself with tefillas, with presents, with bribery. And then he saw that all these things aren't helping. So to be mishtolel and do things that have absolutely no benefit, that could only make things worse, is not ishtablus. That's called ishtablus shlili. That's called negative ishtablus. At some point you have to say, I recognize that this is Ratzon Hashem. That's after you did everything you can possibly do. Like people who were sent to the gas chambers. guys, everything they could have done until then, they should have done. But at the moment, where there's nothing more you can do. Absolutely nothing. Putting up resistance won't help anything. May get you punched a few more times, right? Yeah, you may take a Nazi with you, but it's not going to help. Not going to help. Then at that point, a person has to makabel on himself that this is Gzeiras Hashem. And accept it beratzon, even the simcha. There were people who did that. There were people who danced the simcha into the gas chambers, knowing there's nothing more they could do. There was no way they could resist. The resistance would have been futile. And therefore, recognizing that this is it, without nisim gluyim, they wouldn't be saved. And in some cases, they were nisim. But it's not because of their resistance. They once went and danced into the gas chamber. We have witnesses to such a thing. It's hard to understand how a person could be on that madrig. But that is a madrig. And
it was a good thing you were doing while you were in
prison. Oh, one second. So there's a balance. If you're doing it because you appear to say that Russia is stronger than me, and I am machnia myself to the Russia, that's a chilul Hashem. Yaakov Avinu, even though his kavana was to bow to the Ribono Shel Olam, but he did it in such a way that appeared to a certain degree that he was machni himself to Esav. That's wrong. Right? You machni yourself to the Ribono Shel Olam, you accept, you don't resist because there's no purpose in resisting, or the we'll get to the second idea in a second, let me just one thing at a time. And therefore, kanos, where it is not proper, where the hishtadlis is does not only won't help but may hurt, right, is the kind of kanos that's possible. That's what happened with Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi to champion the honor of their sister and to save her, not only went and fought and killed the perpetrators and got her free, which was 100% right, but they then went and killed the whole city of Shechem, which endangered, Yaakov Avinu said, endangered his entire family. Because now the nations of the world would say, if you can go and kill basically innocent people, the rest of the people of Shechem had nothing to do with this, then we can kill innocent people too. Then you're murderers just like the rest of them. And that gave a sword in the hands of the nations, and they came and they what's it called? Yaakov Avinu had to fight them. And he won. But that didn't change his assessment of the situation in the end. He still cursed Shimon and Levi's anger that they did something wrong. Even though it worked out good in the end. But it could have worked out not good. You have to judge things, I think Nachama Leibovitz quotes, I don't remember who. That's where I saw it. She says that none of God's names is success. You can't judge things whether they're successful or not. You have to judge them on their merits. And therefore, even though in the end, nothing happened to Yaakov. Just the opposite. He got Shechem. And he gave it to Yosef. But it could have happened. You have to judge things by what you do. And he held what they did was wrong. They put his family, the Klal Yisrael, into danger for no purpose. To champion Jewish honor is more important than Jewish blood. To put Jews into danger. And a mice of myself. Similar idea. Years ago, I was a rabbi in Miami, and there was a convention in New York that I was going to. And I flew into Kennedy, or at that time I'd been Idlewild, and I what's it called, got off the plane, got onto a train, and took a train into Borough Park. But the train left me off. Well, it was a shuttle bus. Lets you off in the outskirts of Borough Park. The outskirts of Borough Park are basically a Puerto Rican neighborhood. So I got off the bus, and I see a tremendous crowd of people by a public school, with the newspapers and the radio and television. Something big was going on. So I asked somebody what was going on, and they said that there had been firebombings of shuls in Borough Park, and two members of a certain group, which I won't mention since it's not Helgea, two members of a certain group decided they're going to teach these Puerto Ricans a lesson. So they took two Puerto Ricans indiscriminately off the street and beat them up to show that Jews don't just take these things lying down. Are you going to bomb our shuls? We're going to beat you up. Now, these two that they beat up had nothing to do with the firebombing. They didn't even investigate. They just beat up two Puerto Ricans to teach the other Puerto Ricans a lesson. Okay. So, you know, we're not going to take this sitting down. Never again. We're going to fight, and we're going to champion Jewish honor. Okay, sounds good. Meanwhile, interesting, and I was walking now to get to Borough Park. And the next thing I see, four Puerto Ricans with iron sticks surrounding me. One on each corner, back and in front. Now, I assume this was not an honor guard that somebody sent to escort me into Borough Park, even though I would have liked to think that that's what the case. And they say to me, your friends beat up our friends. So I said, I have no friends here. I'm not even from here. I'm from Miami. I just got off a plane. They said, well, you never get back to Miami. I realized then that I was in a little bit of danger. So I decided these people probably can't carry on a conversation and think and also beat me up at the same time. So I started to speak to them and to ask them, could you tell me what exactly happened? Who are the friends that beat up your friends? Why did they beat up your friends? What happened? So they asked all these questions. They started answering me. And we're talking in a nice conversation. We're walking down the street. And then I said to them, it was very nice talking to you, but I really must go now. And I turned, and they kept going straight. I guess that they were so confused by, Baruch Hashem, I was able to talk my way out of it. After I got out of eyeshot of them, I ran faster than I ever ran in my life. Until I got to a place where it looked pretty safe. Now, those guys who beat up these two Puerto Ricans were champion Jewish honor, but they put my life in danger. So who gave them that permission? They have such broad shoulders that they could make the decision that this was the proper establish to do, even though it didn't take out the people who were going to bomb the shuls, because there could be another two Puerto Ricans that would bomb the shuls and not do with these two people. And they're going to endanger now more Jewish life because they did something irresponsible that may have had no effect at all in a positive way and had a negative effect. So what did they do? They did something. But sometimes you have to realize maybe this is, you can't just do whatever you want. And maybe whatever you do is not doing something. Maybe you have to do things that make sense. And maybe the way to stop things is not by exhibiting your brute strength all the time. Sometimes yes, but not all the time. And you need somebody responsible to make those decisions to decide when this is the proper kind of establishment, when it's not, and to weigh out all of the eventualities. But hot-headed young people who can't weigh out those things, right, that's the problem. And that's what Shimon and Levi did. They made a establishment that they thought was going to send a message. But it was an irresponsible thing that put other people into danger wrongly. Maybe that wasn't the kind of ishtatlus to do. And even if it was successful in the end, doesn't mean it was right. What did Yaakov curse them, it says in the end? To be people who are notlate stalker, people who were, what's it called, Levium, who went around begging for food, and Melamde Tinokos, and educators. So whenever I say this over to Malamdin, I say, really, you can understand, according to Rabbeinu Bachya, why he made the people out to go begging for food. Because that gives you hachnoah, when you know that you can't control every situation, and you have to go begging. Then you know to be machnia yourself. But why Malamdin? Is that a curse? So whenever I speak to Malamdin, I say that to you as Makasha. You understand 100%. Right? But for people not Malamdin, maybe there's a kasha. But the idea is chinuch also is exactly like that. If you want to learn hachnoah, chinuch is the best place to learn it. Because you can do everything right. You can make all these shtadlus, to teach your children, to teach your students, and you can't control anything because they're human beings who have free choice. And you could do everything right and the kids will turn out rotten. And you could do everything wrong and somehow they turn out fine. That doesn't mean that you should do everything wrong with your children so they turn out okay. Obviously. Even though I've learned that nothing is obvious these days. But that's not what I meant to say. A person should be mishtadel and try everything he can to mechanech his children the right way. But you should realize you're not in control. You can do as much as you can. The children are still balei bechir. They can accept it. They can reject. You can try. The smaller they are, the easier it is, because then they haven't yet come to a stage where they can exercise, or they want to exercise the bechir. They're much more accepting. If you don't get them when they're young, right, you wait till they're a little bit older, then it becomes much more difficult. But in the end, you could do everything right. And the child still is a baal bechira. And he may decide he wants to go off the derech. He doesn't want to accept. Or he wants to go against your whatever it may be. So if anything can teach a person hachnoah, that you're not in control, which is what hachnoah is chinuch. So being an ani and being a mechanech, both of them are good remedies to people who think that they can do whatever they want, they don't have to worry about the repercussions, they don't have to worry about anything, we'll do it, and we'll do what we want, and we'll be successful. That's the faith of Shimon and Levi. The Gemara says in Beitza, the Gemara Shul learns, that by nature Jews are very obstinate. We are not machni ourselves. And we were given a Torah to be machni ourselves. The Torah is mateshes kocho shel adam. And the way the Marshal learns that in that phrase is that it subdues us. It makes us more humble. We're not such obstinate people. The more that we learn Torah and we subjugate ourselves to Torah. And that is the idea, and therefore this idea over here also, this hafganot, person has to protest 100%. All the gedolim said, can't just let this go by. You have to protest for two reasons: one, for yourself, that you shouldn't be insensitive, and Shabbos is a perfect Shabbos for this parade. I hope it doesn't happen, but if they had to pick a Shabbos, this is the Shabbos of Sodom and Amorah. And you'd be surprised of what Chazal say was Sodom and Amorah. It wasn't just the people who were parading. There was a lot of other things that you could make hafganot against ourselves. Because that's not the only Sodom and Amorah. It's only one minor aspect. Sodom and Amorah had many things that we have to look at ourselves, that maybe we're Sodom and Amorah. So Shabbos, let me speak about that. What exactly Sodom and Amorah was, yeah.
If I can reduce the argument, the determination of whether to be machnia oneself or not machnia oneself is based on the shikul hadas of those who are to make that decision, the chacham or the rav and gadol hador. The problem arises that when in a generation such as ours, where you have each group having its own chacham, gadol hador, etc., and they contradict one another. So, for example, even in the case of what happened on the way to Borough Park, the Jewish urban legend is that the same group is responsible for keeping Williamsburg safe on the streets by doing exactly that. Every time there was an attack on Jews, they went into the adjoining neighborhood and just bashed heads. So again, if one group is going to say, I won't say who, but certain groups in Yerushalayim say, well, our Chachamim say that we should do this, and then our group, of course, says we shouldn't do this. So we're back to the same problem. How do we determine what to do if we're not in a group?
A person should be have a Rebbe. You can't be not part of any group. That's for some group. You have to have a Shelech HaRav. You have to have somebody that you follow, and that person follows somebody, and that person follows somebody. So every person should have some das told her that they found it. If you don't have that, then something's wrong.
So therefore, how can I condemn those who are in that demonstration since they are just doing what exactly 100%. They're following their...
Right, if that's the case, that's not the case. There's no God will be Israel, to my knowledge, that said that throwing rocks at policemen, putting oil on the street, so you're massacring anybody who goes on the street, not just gays. The gays aren't even there. Right? They're guaranteed, they're not there. So who are we protesting against by harming innocent people? No one. Not the Eidah Haredis, not Rav Eliyashiv, not anybody says that's okay. In fact, they've all said clearly that it's not okay. What they did do is, they said that we hold there has to be mass protests. And they held there had to be as what's called, a disorder, public disorder, or whatever it's called, but not violent. They know that if they permit that, then the lower echelons and the kids are going to get violent. Okay? But they made a shikul that even though they hold that's not okay, and that's going to be an inevitable result, which they can't control, still there has to be the protest. That could be the shikul of one group. Another group could say, no, since that's inevitably what's going to happen, then we can't make the protest like that, because inevitably that's what's going to come. That's the only machlokas. Whether nobody holds, nobody that's a God will be destroyed. No das Torah. There's plenty of people who hold like that. Right? But they're hooligans. Right? I don't care if they have beards and kapotas, right? Or they have earrings. They're hooligans. So, nobody holds that's a derech that I'm familiar with. Okay. Because the only shaila is, if we know that we can't control it, and this is what's going to happen, is it still important to do, or in that case, don't do anything, or protest in the newspapers, or in what's it called, scream in your house, or something, or get together and say tilling. So that's the chiluk deis, and they are in a chinami. Everybody has to follow their das Torah. I have no problem with somebody who follows the Eidah Haredis and goes out to the streets and protests. But no one's going to tell me that if they go and ask for advice, should I throw stones at the policeman, that he'd say yes. He definitely would say no. So nobody can hide behind the Gedolim for doing things. They don't even know what's going on. Most of these people don't know they're protesting. That's a good chance to throw a stone at somebody. And if the police aren't there, so throw it at somebody else. I mean, the people here that got hurt, right? They are not part of the parade and not police. Right? Why were they hurt? So it's absurd. But any chanami, a person has to follow the person he follows for everything. And just like I'll eat what my Rebbe says I can eat, and if somebody else says it's not okay, or the opposite, then he's doing what he's doing, I'm doing what I'm doing. That's the way Klal Yisrael has always been. But except when there was a Sanhedrin, and then things came to a final vote for all of Klal Yisrael. But since there's not been a Sanhedrin, that's the way it is. Yeah.
Rebbe said that we're required to make a mechal, we're required to demonstrate of Sinana in a way. How should we do that? How do we accomplish that? As Rebbe, you said you publicly made a mechal on the tape right now, whatever, in front of us. Says, what you do is you say we're against the parade and Zahud and we're good? Or is there
no,
more
if,
way
if,
of doing it?
Okay. In this country, okay, unfortunately, the situation is that there is a war going on, not just with Arabs, but there's been a war been going on in this country between the secularists, and I'm not just talking about people who are not Frum, because most of the people who are not Frum are traditionalists. They're what's it called? Once when somebody he told me he's not Frum, he's only traditional. I said, well, what makes the difference between Frum and traditional? I said, what do? I'm Shomer Shabbos, Taras Mishpacha, Kashrus, what else did he tell me? I don't remember. So I said, why aren't you Frum? He said, well, I don't dress in a black coat and have a beard, so I'm not Frum. That's the... Most of the people, even if they're not Frum, they're traditional. But there definitely is a group here, and unfortunately, many of them are in positions of power whether they be in the courts or they be in the government, and they basically have taken over this country from what originally was from people who ran this country, where they were the, what's it called, people who built the Yishuvim, the original Yishuvim, and who ran this place. They came and they wrested that power from them. And not only were they happy of doing that, but they wanted then to make their children like that and infiltrate and to make them disappear. And they weren't vague about it. They were clear. That was their intention. They wanted these people to disappear, that the Jewish people should be a secular people and finish. And if the Frum people would have gone away or disappeared or anything else, they would have been very happy. And there's a war. In a war, now we're not familiar with that in America. Because in America there's no war. People, secular people, have no fight against religious Jews. They just they have no shaykhus. Finished. Right? And they're nice, quaint people, just as much as I, you know, admire the Amish. I can admire religious Jews too. But there's shaykhus to me. There's a war going on. Live and let live. But here it's mamash a war for control and for the way this country is going to be. And therefore, in a war situation, you have to deal differently than in a different kind of situation. And again, I have a different philosophy because I grew up differently. I can't really understand, right? But the people who've been here and their children and children's children have a different view of how to deal with the establishment. And to me, it's very foreign. And again, to many people, it's foreign. But I can't, you know, 100% condemn them because they are reacting to something. Maybe the conditions have changed. Maybe they haven't. But I came in, you know, late in the movie. They were here from the beginning. And they know what works and what doesn't work. And the more you get to know, then there's people who are convinced that the only way to do it is by throwing rocks at the policemen and making yourself meshuggah. And I don't know which is a bigger toeva, to tell you the truth. That's in my eyes. But they're fighting a war. And a war, in war as in war, they say. You have to do things that aren't so nice, that wouldn't apply in normal times. So I don't know. I don't know. That's up to Gedolim. But again, even with all of that, there's no one who holds that hurting innocent people is okay. And the police, until they become violent too, that's also part of the what's it called, the Masora here. The police also, when they come to a protest and it's religious people or settlers or whatever they don't like, right, they go gung-ho if they do like them. Some of these policemen became policemen because they're sadists. They're macho and they want to beat up people. There's people who are in the police who know these people. I've asked people like that and they say, yeah, it's true. There are people in the police that just happen to be these kind of people. That's why they became policemen, just waiting for a chance to beat somebody up. Better. Because they're the police. So, again, my advice is stay away from it. You don't have to get involved. The people who feel they have to get involved, there's plenty of them. They don't need your help. You don't have to put yourself in danger. And you don't have to do things that we hold are not the way to do it. And maybe if they did it differently, maybe it'd be more successful. Maybe. I don't know. Again, it's still all different paths of Gedolim. I can follow the ones that I follow for everything, and other people have to follow the other ones. I can hear that there's another opinion. I can understand a little bit why it's like that when where we come from, we never heard of such a thing. But,
you see that the Peace One was cancelled the parade, and now they're still talking about thinking of cancelling it because of the Shmita's going.
I understand, but in the end result, the parade will be cancelled, okay? Lamaisa, homosexuality is not going to go away because this parade is not going to happen. People are going to say, well, we couldn't have a parade, we're becoming heterosexuals, right? That guarantee you is not going to happen, okay? So whether the parade is or the parade isn't going to solve the problem, okay? So what are we going to gain? There's not going to be a parade. Why? Because a bunch of religious Jews, right, threatened to go berserk. And because of that, now what kind of great Kiddush Hashem is that going to leave? Forget about the parade. Okay, so now we don't have what's it called, gays marching into Yerushalayim. But what kind of time is that going to leave in the normal person? Like, was that worth it? I don't know. I really don't know. Again, you have to get old and say, and here it's not just a problem of a bunch of gays walking the street. It's not the problem. The problem is, again, you're in a war. And every battle that's won pushes you farther away from no man's land. And here, why do they want to go through Shalom and make this parade? Right? Because they want people to... they're not stupid people. Right? They want this to legitimize what they're doing. It's another step in... And that's what the High Court... I mean, this is democracy. Democracy means that do whatever you want. And it's legitimate. And other, the more legitimate it becomes, that's another niche. And now you're farther away from the next thing that'll be, and the next thing. And they understood, the Gedolim understand that too. The only question is, like you said, a shikul adas, put everything together, what is more detrimental, what's more beneficial? And again, I'm glad nobody asked me, because I have really no idea. The only idea I can have is, this is not our derech. That's all. More than that, not. Why other people hold it as a derech, I can understand a little bit. Not too much, a little bit. And somebody who follows has to follow it. But follow it, what they said, not what you would like it to be. That not. And what these, burning these garbage cans and putting oil on the street and harming innocent people in Kiryat Sefer or from here. Right? Because you want to have a good time, that's possible. I'm going to end with a famous quote from Chaim Brisker. He said, there's two kinds of kanoim. He said, one is like a housewife, and the other is like a cat. If there's a mouse loose in the house, there's two kanoim, two zealots who want to get rid of that mouse. There's a housewife and a cat. What's the difference between them? The housewife, Nebuch, wants to get Mr. rid of the mouse. She'd rather there be no mice in her house. And she's hoping that this is the last mouse there'll ever be. But if there's a mouse in the house, she's got to get rid of it. She can't live in a house with a mouse running around. She's terrified. So if the next day you find out the mouse decided to move somewhere else, she'd be the happiest woman in the world. If she kills the mouse, she'd be hoping there'd be never any other mice. The cat would be devastated if the mouse moved somewhere else. And he's hoping there'll be plenty more mice. That's a puzzle at Kanoi. Somebody who says, look, this is parade, and I wish that all these people would do tshuva, and they would go somewhere else, and they wouldn't do this, whatever, and then Baruch Hashem, Shalom al Yisrael. But what can I do? If they're doing this and they're trying to legitimize, I have to protest. I have no choice. I'm hoping that they'll call it off, and I'm hoping they'll all do tshuva, and that would be my biggest simcha. That's a kosher kanoi. Then there are people who are saying, oh wow, I hope there's more parades. What's it called? Has to show these people do tshuva, they'll call the parade. What am I going to do on Friday? Right? So that's a possible kanoi. So the person has to know in his heart if he's going for the fun. Well, he's going because it really bothers him and he has to protest. And Nebuch, he'd be much happier if all of this didn't exist and he could lead and sit down and learn another Daf Gemara and not have to do all of this. You have to know in your heart if you're the cat or the housewife.
What should a person feel if he feels a little bit of both?
What?
What should a person do if he feels a little bit of both? What if his first reaction hearing that they were going to have a parade was? He was devastated, really, really upset about it. And then he thought, wow, look, they're burning garbage cans. Cool.
It's actually not cool when you burn garbage cans. Get close.
What if a person really feels both?
If he really feels both, he should sit down and learn some Musar so he'll only feel the proper way.
Just out of curiosity, how does it make a difference anymore? What does Rabbi Yoshua say about this?
Rabbi Yoshua said that he holds it has to be protested.
Oh.
They have to protest. And even though he obviously has said many times, from the Chazon Ish down, that our derech is not with any kind of violence. Zero violence. Protest means what they call in America civil
disobedience.
Civil disorder. That's all. People are discomfort a little bit that they can't get where they want to go because the roads are blocked. And that's makubal, what's it called? That's how you make a statement.
So
and then what?
Is everyone be doing that?
Yeah, if you could do that, and not be together with the people throwing rocks at you, maybe, because they can't find anybody else to throw it at, and you're on a blue shirt, so you're a great target. Really, these things people throw at their neighbors that they didn't have a chance to do before, because you are not going to be able to control what's going on, then better not to be there and to protest it some other way.
Ready?
Yeah.
My cousin brought up a really interesting point. He said, what would happen if not a single Haredi person said a word? What would happen? It would never have made the front pages. No one would have thought about it. Now in America, in Europe, in Israel, for what?
After last year.
That's true to a certain degree, but again, this is not something that a bunch of people just want to have a good day out in Yerushalayim. This is calculated with a purpose to it, to accomplish something and legitimizing and making this a legitimate thing. So if we would say nothing, then people would have given over that without a fight at all. That's wrong. That's what the Gedolim said. There's no gadol on any from any camp. They didn't say that. From every single camp. From the Rosh Hashivas of Merkas Harav to the Eidah Haredis, to Rav Eliyashiv, to Rav Lana, everybody. So something has to be said. Something, you can't just let this go by. That for sure not. Shaila is, what does that mean? So what should you do? There's a lot of chiluke deis, and everybody knows.
But if you do something, those are still rocks. Those really mean.
Yeah, but
if you have a few of the timber, so okay.
But if you want to throw the rocks and burn the thing and put the oil on the street, that inevitably are affecting everybody. It could be a miut, but that's the miut that's nicker. Right, and they affect the roof. You can't avoid it. So you get put up, and then the police go berserk, and they don't really care who threw the rocks or threw the oil. They just indiscriminately decide that everybody who looks wrong is a perpetrator, and they go after. I remember when they had the Shabbos things in Bar Ilan. So some of my kids decided that they, this was the same Shemayim, and they weren't even. They were just spectators. They got beat up. Which is good, because the next time.